What is up, my friends? I am so excited to share this podcast episode with you today. I got the incredible privilege to sit down and speak with Claire Jones and Amaranthia Sepia, and they are with Sisters Creative Rising. They are mother and daughter, and their entire mission is to help creative marginalized women and marginalized genders gain accessibility and visibility in the arts to facilitate personal healing. They are vulnerable and open in our conversation. Claire shares her journey of her life, from her childhood all the way to today, and everything that she has live through and been through, and how that really inspired both her and her daughter to begin Sisters Creative Rising. So such an incredible episode, and I'm so excited for you all to hear it. Welcome to the TrueDo Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Dirksen, and this podcast is all about getting inspired and empowering yourself to be the hero of your story while feeling incredible from the inside out. Hello, ladies. I'm so excited to speak with both of you today, Amaranthia and Claire. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast.
Yes, thank you for having us.
Really, I want to dive right into Sister Creatives Rising. Can you explain to the listeners what that is and really where it was born from?
Yeah, so Sister Creatives Rising, it's a mother-daughter project. We create under Sister Creatives Rising, we focus on marginalized women, marginalized genders, who are artists, who are creatives, any kind of creative, and we find a way to tell their stories, showcase their stories, represent them, and we do that with our art show called Art in Mind, which is a virtual art show and virtual event, and our first one was in 2021, and we basically show these short films that these artists send in, and we select them and we pull it together in a documentary, and they're telling their stories of triumph, of healing, with whatever they've experienced, whether it's things such as domestic violence, mental health issues, disability, race, gender, etc., sexuality, and they're explaining their stories and talking about how art has helped them heal. Mm-hmm. And they showcase their artwork. So in 2021, our first show was called Reflections of Women, Femmes, and Our Mental Health During COVID. And so that was a big focus on COVID and how it affected this group of about, I believe it was a total of about 12 creatives total. I think we had like 8 artists, and then we had some entrepreneurs and some speakers. Mm-hmm. We always feature therapists, a disability activist, or activists are doing things in their community and they tell their story, they give resources for free and things like that. So it's a big advocacy event, and overall the whole project Sister Creatives Rising is about advocacy and creating visibility and accessibility for these artists, because they're usually unseen.
Yeah, I love that. What inspired the two of you to really to begin this?
Yeah, you can explain that.
Well, two different things. First thing, it was inspired for me for when I was young, growing up in Barbados under domestic violence. I always was writing. Writing was my way of dealing with things, being born into domestic violence. And I saw how my mom was treated and how she was abused and battered. And I promised myself that one day I would find a way to help her through my writing or mm-hmm. whatever. And things got sidetracked because domestic violence really caused a huge rupture in my life. And I dropped out of school and everything. And I found my way overseas and eventually got back into school, went to school for my GED and SATs, got back in and was able to get to college. And it was there that I began to put this idea together with a research project that took me to the Goree Island, which is where one of the slave houses are is on off the coast of Senegal.
Okay.
And it was there that I entered the slave houses and was able to stand at the door no return, where these slaves would be pushed off into ships. And that was the last time they saw their homeland. And I was able to stand there at that door. And while I was standing there, it came to me that it was very important that I break this legacy of violence that I had inherited. It's very important for me, this intergenerational legacy of violence that I had inherited. And the way that I was going to do that was through this work. And that work was a play. I went back to school with all the research I'd gotten from there and the inspiration. And I wrote this play called Shadows of Hoodoo. And it told the story of my life with the domestic violence. And I was able to then, okay, this is how I'm going to do it.
Yeah, at Mount Holyoke.
At Mount Holyoke College in South Hadley, Massachusetts. And then, so that was where the inspiration came from. And then Amaranthia was born, and I raised her with this. Amaranthia was born and she was very ill. And so I had to take care of her, stay-at-home mom. And through it all, art was the thing that kept everything together, because as I was raising her, I was healing. I was dealing with all this stuff that was happening from the trauma that I had experienced. And so I raised Amaranthia with that. And when it came for her, we lived in Japan for a while and we came back, and she was bullied because she was very different when she came back to the U.S. to start school. And it was then that I realized that her creating this art could help her, because she was getting very depressed and we had to homeschool her. So we got together with a person who was in the school where Amaranthe had gotten a college scholarship, and we got together all her pieces, and we did a show that toured around the area where we lived in different libraries. And she was able to find her voice and to talk about her anti-bullying through these pieces. And that was where I think that's where we were like, wait, this is something that we can do.
Yeah.
So then I became ill last year. I was diagnosed with cancer suddenly and had to go in for emergency surgery. In 2021, the year before, when we did that show, it was coming together that we needed to do something together. And at the end of 2021 is when we did a business course together, and we realized we founded the name Sister Creatives Rising. And under that was where we were going to do all this work. And then I got sick and had to be in the hospital most of last year fighting this cancer. So throughout that whole time, I continued to write and everything. And Amaranthia and I were like, we got to find a way to get back to do this. And when I came into remission last October, I said to her, we got to go now.
Yeah.
So we started to pull it together. And over the last few months, we've been doing this work towards creating our second show. So it has it's come from when I was a child all the way to now, back to my daughter. And this is how I'm breaking the generational legacy of abuse that I promised myself I would do at that point. At that door where the slaves were pushed off and never saw their homeland again. That was a very, very important moment for me.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, the whole time you were speaking, I'm covered in goosebumps. There's so much, obviously, you know, passion in what you do and purpose, because it's so personal for you. And I love that the two of you are building this together, and that both of your journeys are so inspired into everything that you're doing. So is Sister Creatives Rising, it's a completely virtual platform?
Yes, exactly.
And so why is that important for you to have that virtual platform for people?
Yeah, so there's many reasons why, but it all falls into accessibility and inclusivity. So we basically, I would say, like when I was doing tour with my anti-bullying project, it was called I'm Proud of Who I Am. When as I got older in my late teens and I wanted to find galleries to be in, I was usually the only Black young artists, sometimes the youngest in general, barely any diversity in spaces. And so a lot of times I was snubbed, or my work wasn't taken seriously, or the stuff I was addressing, whether it was about my experiences with bullying, or my experiences with race, with gender, was always kind of pushed aside. And where we live, most of the artists here are older, 70, 80, 90 years old. New Hampshire is less than 2% Black, so we don't see many people like us. I think it's about 7,000 people here are Black women. So it's just there's barely any representation. So yeah. Already I was like, from 2017, 2018, when I was 17, 18 years old, I was like, okay, I need to find a way to get my story out there as I'm getting older to tell these stories. And so I always found kind of virtual spaces that cared more, and I was able to find more diverse groups. When the pandemic hit, then the world opened up for us, weirdly. And so we had to go completely virtual. I wasn't able to go into college the way I planned to. I was planning to do virtual college. And I started finding spaces where I was able to help create virtual shows as an art coordinator, and pull together these stories of minority artists, and also finding spaces for us, both of us, to tell our stories as people with invisible disabilities. And so I started realizing the access issue wasn't just about race or ethnicity, it was also about disability, because my mom is immunocompromised, and especially now that she went through cancer, she was already immunocompromised. So COVID is a massive risk for us. And we started realizing that we can't go into physical spaces either. Even when we started finding more diverse spaces, such as like in Boston, we couldn't find the access because it was just too risky for us. And now that things like masking is going away, that's another access issue for people who are immunocompromised, because there's immunocompromised artists, there's a disabled artist who don't want the risk of getting another disability on top of what they're already dealing with, or their caretakers. And for example, we take care of each other. I was her caretaker last year, but I was already have a disability, so it's a disabled person taking care of another disabled person, and you as a disabled person beforehand taking care of me as a disabled person. So sometimes, whether the caretaker is disabled or not, you don't want to expose who you're taking care of to another illness. So it's just a lot of different things happening. And so we were like, okay, we really need to continue doing this virtual space, not only to ensure that we can bring more minorities into these spaces, but especially disabled people. Like, there's a famous story that came out, this man who is blind, and he was able to enter a building, no problem. But then he entered into the elevator, and the elevator had a touch screen with no braille. So he was stuck in there. I don't know. I think it was a couple hours, maybe. I don't remember, but it was very bad. And he couldn't call for help because the call for help button was digital. So he had no assistance. Yeah, it was terrible. And so there's issues like that where, you know, maybe someone could enter a building because they have a ramp, right? But then if that person has another disability, maybe they can't enter the elevator properly, or maybe the stairs aren't accessible so they can get in, but they can't get the full experience.
That's right.
So that's the problem with galleries. Like, for example, I think it was 20, I believe I have it here. It was like 2019. Yeah, 2019, 75 New York galleries were hit with lawsuits related to ADA. So people couldn't get in their buildings. They couldn't experience the art.
Yeah.
There was another issue with where, like, for example, in museums, women in museum leadership rose from 57% to 62% between 2017 and 2018. And this was reported on artsy.net, which is like a resource for artists. But within that percentage, there's barely any woman of color. There's maybe barely any queer artists, you know. So there's we're not being seen, we're not being heard. I think even in galleries in New York, I think about 80% of like the major galleries represent only white men. So it's just, we're not being included. Yeah. So it's very important for us to prioritize marginalized artists, especially marginalized women, marginalized genders who are constantly being snubbed because we've experienced it, so we understand it.
Yeah. Yeah. So speak to more of that importance first, you know, speaking up for marginalized women. Yeah. And I know you said why it's important, but, you know, go a little deeper with that and marginalized genders. And I, yeah, speak more to that.
Yeah. It's, I think the major issue is representation.
Yeah.
When you don't see yourself in media, when you don't see yourself in the arts and you're so passionate about art, you think, well, it's impossible for me.
Yeah.
And so growing up, already being bullied for my hair, my skin, my mom being an immigrant,
Buddhist.
Being Buddhist, and usually being the only Black girl in the classroom or in the community space, I would always be like, what's the point of wanting to pursue this sometimes? Because like, I wouldn't see myself. I wouldn't see others that cared about, for example, like comic art. I was really passionate about comic art growing up, and all of the comics I would read were by men. I never really saw any by Black women, women of color. And so I would kind of didn't, it was hard for me to find people that I should look up to, mentors, especially when I started realizing I want to tackle these issues through my art instead of just kind of creating characters. I really want to actually address these issues. So when you want to start pushing and getting into these industries, you realize like I'm not being understood because the people who are in charge are they're not a person of color, they're not woman, so you're not being understood and you're not being seen as what your story or what your experiences are not seen as important.
Yeah.
So it's very discouraging. So when we create this work, it's about like saying, hey, there's other people like you. And it can be hard to find other people because there's issues of finding resources or finding spaces that accept. So then you have to really dig deep sometimes to find the right people. But when you find them and you show them, then other people feel encouraged, like, oh, I'm not alone. Oh, there's other people who care about comics. There's other people who care about graphic design and activism in the arts that look like me and care about these issues and talk like me. So, you know, I think that's what we're trying to challenge. I think it's about inspiring people.
Yeah. And sorry.
No. And healing, and at the same time, doing what you love.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I realize the most important thing for me in life, coming from where I came from, is to have freedom of spirit. And to, I mean, I didn't know what it was to love myself. You know, I didn't know, because I had so many things going against me coming from that background. And as I got older, I realized it wasn't, you know, as you grow older, I would hope, I know that I have come to terms with it. I forgive my parents, you know, and I realized that they did what they knew best. They gave me the best that they could give me.
Yeah.
So it took me a while, but I came to a place of forgiveness first. I had to do that in order to be able to move forward in my life. And then it's like, when you don't see yourself and all around you, you're here, you know, the word that I grew up with in Barbados, the first word that I learned was illegitimate. I was illegitimate because my parents weren't married.
Wow.
You know, I carried that with me.
Yeah.
And until I had cancer last year, I I could say that I have been on in on one long dark night of the soul, if you know. I've been, my whole life has been like a dark night of the soul, where I've just been feeling that everything was okay, and then it's pulled away from me, a reality hits and I have to recover, and it's so massive and it's so hard, but I have to do it, otherwise I will die.
Yeah.
And so I just have always felt that. And when you come into when you become a mother from that perspective, how do you give hope to a child? As because I'm healing as I have given birth to her, I'm healing, I'm discovering all this stuff about myself. How do you even begin? But you know now that, okay, I've come from all that, but I know that I have to, I have another human being that I have to care for, so I have to figure it out, right?
Yeah.
So all those things that Amaranthia was talking about, like being, not seeing, not being a part of anything, you come to a point in your life when you say, I will make space so people can see me.
Yeah. You know,
I have a poem that I wrote. I'll read a little bit from it. It says, when I was growing up, it says, I remember how I started to look for me, to look for the little girl with the braids dotting she had like the pieces on a checkerboard. Sometimes I would read 3 or 4 books all in one day, just looking for me, the little girls with the braids dotting she had like the pieces on the checkerboard. So growing up, you know, although I came up in Barbados and there were all these dark-skinned people around me, I saw these tourists and stuff coming in, and they were off and they were able to travel from really far, and you know, and they could do all these things, and I would have all these books but never see a picture of me, you know. And then when I had Amaranthia, that I was in my 30s, and that was still so. That is, you know, that was still so, and I
like
had to
30
something
later.
Yeah, and I had to give this child hope from a place of trying to find hope for myself.
Yeah.
It's only last year when I got cancer and I was on that bed that I had to find that love for myself.
Yeah.
And finding that love for myself, I began, every day I wake up and I hug myself and I kiss myself. I hug myself in the mirror and I say, I love you. And I kiss myself and I pat myself on the shared shoulder and I say, you're beautiful. I tell myself that now. I never did that before. But having cancer made me realize that, you know, I have to like get back here and I have to help this child that I've brought into the world, and it's not finished yet. And she still has a fighting to do. And so it's been really hard facing this thing where you feel like you're almost like going to be erased. And having to say, no, I matter, over and over again, and it gets tiring, you know. But like she said, you know, the art really helps you to combat that.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that, you know, writing and art and how that can be healing. Like I journal, like I write all the time for my own journey and healing and just clarity. But before we dive into that, Claire, one of the things that I hope you don't mind me sharing, but when we first talked and you were sharing your story, you had cancer. I believe you told me you had 50% chance of paralysis and you might never walk again. Like the doctors were like, you're crazy and you're walking.
Yeah, the nurses, not this one nurse. Well, the cancer was on my spine and it was wrapped around like a donut, and I was losing my mobility by the hour when I was admitted to the hospital. So the coldness was coming up towards my breath. And I was like, this isn't real. You know, this isn't real. And when they told me that I had 50% paralysis, as before I went into 50% chance of paralysis before I went into the operation, I was lying there and they were telling me this, and I was like, this is really happening, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I kind of made peace, and when I came out and my feet started to move, they were all shocked. And within a few days, I was up off the hospital bed, and they were lifting and I was moving. And then one of the doctors came in and said, you're in the rare 1% to do this after this kind of surgery. And he said, we have to get moving right now for you to, because you're beginning to move. So this means you can walk, you can do this.
Yeah.
Then I went through all that. I went into rehab. And when I came home, my chart was so crazy with all the things that I had to go through that when the nurses come into my house would see the chart before they met me. They were one of the ladies, the nurses came in and she said, I saw that chart and it was like, this lady has some things going on. So when she came in and she saw this bright person getting up off the bed, being able to, she was like, how can you do this? I said, I just decided I was going to do it. And then, but when I first came home, this nurse, when I told her that I was going to walk by summer, it was April when I came home, I was in a brace and I couldn't look left, right, up or down. I could only look forward and I could only take off the brace when I got into the bed.
It was a massive brace too. It went from like here all the way neck, down.
All down to my waist.
Yeah.
And I was clipped. Neck to
waist. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to use a wheelchair, walker.
It was terrible.
And she said to me, I said to her, I'm going to walk by the summer. She said, what do you need to focus on now? I said, and I,
she said, don't think about that for
several months. I was like, okay.
Wow. Next month you started walking.
Yeah.
Without assistance. It was probably,
but it I was started like, it was like a toddler. Yeah. You know how you see a toddler? They're crawling on one leg or they crawl. It's like that.
And then days after chemo.
Yeah.
Her first chemo.
Yeah.
And it was like 3 weeks after her radiation treatment. And so we were like,
what?
Yeah. How chemo is in your body and you're walking.
Yeah.
And it's all wobbly, but we were crying because we were like, what?
I was sitting on the bed and some I heard this voice say to me, get up and walk right now, walk across the room. And I was like, huh? Okay. I got up and I walked across the room and I yelled for Emma. I said, Emma, oh my God, I'm walking. And Emma came, she got the camera immediately and she started to take the video of me. And I was like a little kid, like, the, you know, learning to walk for the first time. And I was like, I am walking.
Oh my God.
It was the most amazing experience. And I looked at it. I could feel every finger, every toe, every bone, every muscle. I cannot tell you how in gratitude and in appreciation I felt for my body for the first time in my life. I was actually feeling it. And I realized what domestic violence had done to me, the trauma that I had carried, that I had lived a numbed life all of my life. I had been numbed in all ways until this cancer just said, wake the hell up.
Yeah, wake up. And I you know, I hear so much determination in that. And I think things happen for a reason. And the universe is saying, like, hey, this is look how strong you are. Look how determined you are. Now you get to go create this incredible platform for these people who need it and it will thrive in it. And I love that it's virtual. I love that there's so much inclusivity. I hope this breaks barriers. I hope this, you know, opens doors to, you know, art galleries and museums to like check in and be like, oh my gosh, we need to be doing something about this. Right. Yeah. And so I love that. So let's talk a bit about that healing journey, because I think art, music, writing, that's so important for people's personal healing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, I think like for you, it's been writing.
Mm-hmm.
And some art as well.
Mostly writing.
And for me, like I was saying earlier, it started off with comics. And now, weirdly, I don't create so much art now because somehow I just got thrown into coordinating and directing, and so I'm learning how to do that. It's been very healing for me from such a young age. I think that when I came back from Japan, because we lived here from 2004 to 2006, I had this really bad reverse culture shock, or return culture shock. Mm-hmm. It's one of those terms, but basically it was like a trauma because mm-hmm. my foundation was Japanese schooling and stuff, and also Japanese like international schools, and so the art that I experienced there, because we lived in the expat area, and so we were exposed to all these multicultural galleries and festivals. I participated in festivals. I got to present to like the princess at one point. I was chosen for that, so it was like, yeah, it's like really exciting, amazing experience. And so the art from the Buddhist practices there and Shintoism was massive part of my identity. And so when I came back and all of that was gone and I started being bullied, the only thing I had was really my mom's support mm-hmm. and then my art, because I was always creating, but my only way to connect back to mm-hmm. that experience was to create art about it. So I started learning about Japanese mythology, and we practiced Japanese Buddhism, so some of that was incorporated into my work. I got really into anime and comics and manga and things like that. And so that was kind of my saving grace, that despite all the bullying and being isolated and things like that, I just always had my sketchbook with me. And so I always say like art became like my only friend. And mm-hmm. so when we eventually moved to New Hampshire and the bullying got worse, we were in Connecticut previously when we first came back. I had an art teacher who saw my work, and my mom spoke with him about my experience and what was happening with me. And he was like, you know what? I need to create an art show for you. So we created, he had this thing every Friday called Town Meeting at my elementary school. And so kids would come in and teachers, and they would do presentations and talk about like happenings and stuff. And so for the first time, they created this art show. And I presented all this art I was doing about my experience. And all the kids were like, ooh, and on, they were like, oh my gosh, this is really cool. And they started coming to me and talking to me for the first time ever. It was like fifth grade now, so I'm about to transition to middle school. And yeah. It was what, like, and it made me realize like I really want to be an artist. I think I knew when I was 8, but by that time I was 11, I was like, I really want to become an artist. And I got a scholarship at a local school called Kimball Jenkins, like full scholarship, started taking adult classes, and I was like 11 or 12, and I just dove deep into it. And so eventually when it became online homeschooled, because of the bullying, it was getting so bad, and I started doing that I'm Proud of Who I Am art tour that continued to help me cope with what I now learned was complex PTSD, agoraphobia, and panic disorder.
And we are diagnosed with the same thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah.
It's like mirror.
Yeah. So it's been art therapy. It's helped me cope. It's helped me tell my story. If I'm having a hard time communicating what I'm feeling, I just go and on use a pen and paper, or now my iPad, and yeah. just draw out what I'm feeling.
And all the artwork okay, on the site is
mine, and then some stuff from Canva, the supplement.
Yes.
But a good chunk of it is my designs and stuff. And so that's also been healing too, being able to incorporate the art
in there.
Yeah, and concepts to the website as well. So
yes.
Yeah, and it's healing, and it's such a great way of expression, right? Like to express yourself. Like you said, sometimes you can't always say, like, you know, have the words to say things, and it can come out through art. It can come out through music. There's so many different ways. So I love that. I love what the two of you are doing. I just want to share with the listeners to go to your website and check you out, sissacreativesrising.com. Also on Instagram at Sista Creatives Rising, LinkedIn, same thing. Everyone needs to go check this out. So is this platform available to anyone in the world because it's virtual?
Yes.
We the last show we had, it was international. I mean, that's why we do it, because it means that any person, anywhere, you know, if they can't do it because of the time we've recorded it, they can get it after, because we record it. But it is just anybody who wants to be there can have a seat.
And when's the next show?
Yeah. So, okay. So the next show is October 5th. 100%. Right now, we are going to be launching our open call June 1st.
Okay.
And originally, we were focusing on highlighting Black women, Black femmes, and their experiences, because my mom's journey as Black immigrant going through this medical system and, you know, using art, spirituality to heal.
Mm-hmm.
But as we started doing outreach, we kind of were getting like a tepid response. So we decided, you know what, let's go and expand it. Mm-hmm. Well, still highlighting my mom's story, highlight women of color in general, femmes of color who are going through similar things and trying to use their art to heal. So the show is called this year, Art in Mind, I Know Who I Am, Journeys of Women of Color and Femme Expressing Creatives. So we're having this open call where we're going to select five artists, and our sponsor, Brain Arts Org, who is a Boston nonprofit that helps marginalized artists in Boston create spaces for them and opportunities. They're helping us pay $200 each to these five artists, because the first time we weren't able to pay everyone.
Yeah.
And we weren't able to pay the artists specifically.
And it's also a charity event and we are also going to be
fundraising
so that on the night of the show, actually leading up to the show, we'll open our fundraising, and then that money will go back to Brain Arts in Boston to help them, artists in the marginalized artists will go back.
So
even as we do this, we're trying to give back.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
It's completely free too. So like when people get their tickets, it's through a website called GiveButter, which we'll be launching the tickets and stuff late August. But
you just register and you donate whatever you
exactly
can.
It's just whatever you can. And last time we got $751.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was amazing because it was a first new time. Concept. It was very experimental. Now things have become more solid. So it's been really amazing, like being able to get funding this year, where last year was just
to be able to pay the artists and the people we're working with.
Mm-hmm. Other sponsor is Dancing Queerly Boston, and so they've also helped us help pay us and help pay a good chunk of our team members. We're still looking for more funding through grants and sponsorship and things like that, but it's just been an amazing experience so far.
Beautiful. So I know you had a call to action for our listeners. Can you share that?
Yeah. For both of us, if you have a call, both of us have one. My call to action is get ahead of life before life gets ahead of you.
Mm. And
basically meaning that don't wait till something happens to do something about it. Find, listen to yourself. Listen to your body, listen to your heart, and pay attention, because you don't want to be caught in an emergency situation like me, having to go into emergency surgery and near paralysis. You know what I'm saying? Pay attention to your life.
Yeah.
And, your intuition is important, and, you know, just get ahead of your life before it gets ahead of you.
Yes. I love, love, love that. Thank you.
For me, I guess this time, especially as we've been building the show and working on and being inclusive, my call to action would be about inclusivity. Is like it's a multifaceted thing, and it's not just one simple action that resolves everything. It's about going into those communities, learning from people, to hear what they need. And I think a major part of like what we were doing is, for example, our mission statement before was marginalized women and femmes, and we learned that that wasn't really accurate. And so we consulted with a person who has been doing activism in the LGBT community. Her name is Maggie. She's an activist that co-founded Dancing Queerly Boston. And we realized, wait, we're not being as inclusive as we think we're being. And so we reworked it and changed to marginalized genders, because we realized that we don't want to label people when it's not accurate. So having something more open to marginalized genders, it's more inclusive. It's more like, hey, look, if you like what we're doing and you feel you're a fit, feel free to join us.
Yeah.
And I know in this year specifically, well, working with her, we realized, okay, well, using femmes in this context where women of color and femme expressing creatives for the I Know Who I Am show, it works in the sense of changing it to femme expressing, explaining what femme is and what exactly we're looking for, instead of saying woman slash femmes and kind of pulling it together as one, because they're two different. And so that's what we were doing before. And so it's about having that accountability, going into those communities, working with activists, creatives, disabled people, people of color who aren't being seen, being misunderstood, and go to them and be like, hey, you know, we want to make sure we're doing this right, while doing your own research at the same time. That's really important. I feel that's the foundation, and realizing that that to be inclusive it's ever changing.
And when you say disability includes people like us who can't leave, who are unable to leave because we have
immunocompromised
or we're healing, we can't get to there. So when you say you have a disability event, be aware of all what disability
means,
context. And also that when you have a disability event and there are people who and you want it to have, maybe you have a hybrid event, it's virtual and some people come physical, be aware of asking people at the event to wear masks, because there are some people there who can get really sick. If they come physically, you know, you want to be able to take care of them too, you know. So disability means, you know, you got to take care. When you say that you have a disability event, think about all these things.
And it's not just a visual disability.
There people are disabled and you can't see it. They look okay, but they're not. And they really, really need protection, you know, from what's going on still with COVID in the communities and stuff. It's still there. It's still affecting people who are disabled.
Yeah, and I love that you brought that up, because I think a lot of people think of they hear the word disability and they think it's a physical thing. If I can't see it, then it's not there. But that's obviously not true. So I love that you brought that up and, you know, kind of bringing that awareness to people's minds.
Right. As they plan their events, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Claire Amarantia, thank you so much. This was such a great conversation. I love what you are doing. Listeners, go check them out, sistacreativesrising.com. Thank you. Thank you so, so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity.
If you liked what you heard on today's podcast, then hit that subscribe button and head over to the TrueToYouLifestyle.com website to learn more about what we do.